Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome. This is Way of the Dreamer with Robert Noss, who we celebrate the power of dreams, coincidence, and imagination in life. We have a wonderful guest today. She is an impeccable guide to Egypt and the powers of Egypt. And she is pretty good on the nature of the soul and the spirit and what it asks of us. And she's written a lot of books. I was just asking her how she keeps doing it year after year. Her name is Normandy Ellis. I first found her many years ago when she published a book called Awakening Osiris, which is not a translation. It's not simply a free version. It's a retelling of the magic secrets of the Egyptian Book of the Dead. And her account of the phoenix, what I would call the phoenix rebirthing, which is very much her own poetic vision in that book, Awakening Osiris, is a rhapsodic marvel. I mean, with her permission, I've used it in my own workshops and classes to help us understand that, and to understand fire, we must become fire, and we can do that, and we can rise from the ashes. The second book by Normandy that I read was called Dreams of Isis, in which she includes some of her own dreams. And she gives, actually, for my mind at that stage, about the clearest account of what's going on with all these different Egyptian spiritual bodies and aspects of consciousness and so on, which fascinate people, but they get confused about, you know, the Ka and the Bar and the Ak and all of that, and the shadow and the name and all the rest of it. We might ask her to educate us a bit on that front in this conversation. She's got a new book coming out on soul transformation. So let me pause at this moment, Normandy, to welcome you and to quote a phrase from Mr. Jung. Mr. Jung said in Psychology and Religion, of all the things hidden in humans, the most hidden is soul. I find that very interesting, because soul is a slippery subject, isn't it? I mean, Heraclitus said you will never find the limits, the borders of the soul, however far you travel. But you and your work with Egyptian models and with, you know, spirituality and spiritual experience in general, you lead us to think a lot about soul. So where are you going now in your work, including the new book which we'll have in our hands soon? Where are you going in your understanding of soul transformation, how we can be guided to hear more of soul and bring more soul into our lives?
Oh, thank you. Thank you for the great introduction, and thank you for that question. I am just now teaching a class on the 9 spiritual bodies of the ancient Egyptians. Of course, I include 10 because there's that physical self, which is like the cocoon that holds all of the other parts of us that are in process and in transformation. It's more like, you know, the skin, the shell. But the soul, in the Egyptian tradition, there are 2 bodies that are eternal. Many of the other bodies that we have continue to be active while we give them some energy and life and juice and consciousness. But after we pass into spirit, 2 of those spiritual bodies remain. And the first is the soul, and the second is the Ak. And the soul is called Ba. Okay, and the Ak is what we would think of as the God seed or the higher consciousness. So the Ba and the Ak are the 2 eternal beings. The way that I understand it is that the Ba is the personal consciousness over lifetimes. Okay, so the many times that we have been incarnated is accrued, and the information is contained inside the Ba. It's our, the Ba, it's our own Akashic record, if you will. Now, the Ak is that part of our Akashic record that becomes contributed to the large Akashic record of the divine, the cosmic record. And because we are divinized souls, you know, physics would tell us that we have access to anything that we have ever had contact with, you know, in consciousness. And no two things that have ever been together can really be separated by time or space. And so that's when people somehow tap into the divine consciousness and are able to download a piece of information and carry it into their box. And then transmit it, you know, as a teaching, let's say. You do that all the time, noticed.
Well, most people, thank you for this excellent beginning. I'm going to sort of jut in with a question or two from time to time, if that's okay. I mean, most people have seen images of the Ba and recognize the human-headed hawk, which is the form that it's often shown in. So in life, Normandy, is the Ba in the body, or is it in and out of the body? Does it travel around outside the body?
Well, according to the ancient Egyptians, it has access to in and out of the body. There was a wonderful story about a very great Egyptian shaman, and he and his son assumed their Ba forms and went into the Duat, into the underworld. And they traveled around to see, oh, what would happen to us after we had died? How was the soul weighed, and so on? They themselves were not dead, but they were witnesses to what happens to the soul during the weighing of the heart. And this was the fourth son of Ramses the Great, and Ramses the Great's grandson. And so this was a story about them.
Okay, and so, then the Ark, in lifetime, what is the relationship between the Ark and the body? Is there a relationship, or is it like a celestial double for the Ba?
I don't really think it's a double. I think it is, the way I think of it, and I'm hoping this is the right way to think of it, is that when the ovum and the sperm meet, they have actually witnessed light coming into being, and that's the Ark. That's the fire that sets everything in motion, and it's the fire that stays in us. That's, you know, it's the pilot light, so to speak, that keeps us going through life, and then the flame returns to the cosmos as part of the great flame.
So you're describing it as a spiritual force, as a spiritual power, as a vital energy?
Yes. Yes, the God spark. Yeah, I think that's what the Kabbalists would call it, the God seed.
I'd love you to give the seminar on the nine bodies, but since we're in the thick of it already, let's go to one of the most interesting for discussion, at least from my point of view, which is the Ka, the K-A, the Ka. I struggle with different descriptions of the Ka. Reading an advanced version of your new book, I read this. I'm going to quote you to yourself, Normandy, if that's all right.
Okay.
here's part of what you say about the Ka in a section about bodies on the spiritual plane, which is a very nice section title, by the way. Ka is long-lasting, but not eternal. It can be accessed and activated through prayer and adoration, but if forgotten, it's an energy body that will dissipate. So that's interesting, isn't it? I mean, you have to keep it fed in one sense or another. I presumably we're talking now about what happens after the death of the physical body. Perhaps you have to feed it in some sense in physical life as well. So let me give you two other quick quotes from you and then come back with some questions. Here's a second one. Our living Ka precedes us to those sites where we need to be in attendance to receive initiations and spiritual growth. One ancient saying was, may you be led by your cars to pure places. Now, here's where I'm going to pause and ask my first question. I'm quite familiar, because I have some Scandinavian ancestry and have been compelled to study the Old Norse traditions, which I was dragged to somewhat reluctantly because those Vikings weren't always very gentle. But in the Norse traditions, there is a form of a double, an energy double, and it's full of doubles, full of doppelgangers, this tradition, called the Vardaga. Vardaga literally means follower, but in practice, the Vardaga is the version of you, your second self, the car-like version of you who turns up ahead of you. So you're going to visit someone, and you go through the door before your physical body arrives. Your description of the car sounds a bit like that. And it just leads me to wonder again, does the word double apply to the car? What are some of the ways, what are some of the further ways you would describe the car? Our relationship with it, what happens to it in dreaming, and what happens to it after death?
Okay. The understanding of the cause, I understand, if I've read the Egyptian text correctly, that we have 14 cars.
Yeah.
Okay, Osiris had 14 cars. So it is possible to be in multiple places at the same time. And so the ka is that enlivening principle that we can send forth of ourselves. Now, a lot of times that can happen in dreams. You know, we send forth images to, I'm sure you've done it, to multiple students that you're working with. That you'll appear in their dreams, or you will be thinking about, I need to tell so-and-so this particular thing. And a few minutes later, you know, you're in touch with them either in the dream time or through a phone call, or I was just thinking about you, you know, somebody shows up on the street. Those types of things are examples of multiple ka experiences that we're able to send forth through the power of the will and the mind, you know, through the mental plane. Now, not everyone is able to do that, though some people do it sometimes. We'll send one or two and we'll make a connection. But, you know, a Dalai Lama, say, would be able to send multiple cars out into the world to do things. Now, the other way to think about it is like many, many people have a connection to Sekhmet, the goddess. They have stood in her chapel. They have felt her energy. Some of them have been very touched by their energy. Their bodies covered in fire when they're standing before her. And so, you know, as a result, Sekhmet has a very strong healing energy. People come, they say their prayers, they say invocations to Sekhmet. And when you do that, the ancient Egyptians would say my name that I may live. And so Sekhmet comes to live and stays alive because there have been so many prayers about her. In the same way, for those folks who are Christian, that's how Jesus stays alive. All those people praying, you know, Mother Mary, all of those people making petitions to her. There's this wonderful, wonderful book by, I'm trying to remember his name, Lyle Watson. He wrote a book called The Secret Life of Inanimate Objects. And he talked about how there were particular chapels and churches where people had prayed to the Virgin Mary to save their families back home, you know, in Mexico or South Central America or so on. And there were so many, you know, my son is you know, ill, or, you know, I'm separated from my family and I'm worried about them. And they would say so many prayers and make so many offerings to the Virgin Mary that the statue began to move around inside the church. And, you know, the clergy believed, well, somebody must be coming in at night and moving that statue around because it keeps going from its little chapel, side chapel, to stand right in front of the picture, you know, the statue of Jesus. And it would be crying bloody tears, you know, and all kinds of things. So they put chains around her feet to keep someone from trying to move the statue. And sure enough, the next day, the statue would show up in the same place. And it was, you know, well, Watson believed it was because the statue had been enlivened, its ka had been enlivened by having said its name, you know, repetitiously and reverentially. I believe that that is, you know, how our ancestors stay in touch with us. You know, I just got back from my
Well, you've taken us into you've taken us into two fascinating subjects very quickly, Normandy. One is the fact that we might have doubles who are especially active in dreams, so we might have 14 car girls who can turn up in different places. Actually, I know from my own experience in journaling and practice, including practice with other people and in mutual dreaming and so on, I know we can be several places at once, at least when it comes to the dream time. And the idea that each of us, actually, whether oblivious to it or not, might have as many as 14 aspects or doubles that can turn up in different places is really very interesting. And now you're on to what the Greeks called telestike, which is statue magic, animating images, how that's done sometimes through ritual, through intention. And whenever that theme comes up, I think of my youngest daughter when she was very small, and we were watching the Muppet Show. And it was the Egyptian episode. I don't know if you ever saw this, but Bert and Ernie are walking through an Egyptian pyramid or an Egyptian tomb or something like that. And suddenly something reaches out, a statue reaches out and taps one of them. I forgot whether it's Bert or Ernie. And it's the double of Bert or Ernie with Egyptian headgear. So suddenly you see the double, the statue-esque double of Bert or Ernie tapping the Muppet on the shoulder. And my three-year-old daughter says, with great awe, statue tap you sometimes. So when the theme comes up, I think of that little voice, statue tap you sometimes. And of course, as we know, I mean, in every culture that we look at, if we go back far enough, people not only recognize that things are alive, that there's a spirit and everything, including a stone and certainly a tree or a river, but the spirits can be moved around and they can be put into objects. And if it's done with ritual and it's a statue or a shamanic power object, I mean, that can be very impressive. You've had many experiences of it, and your experiences with a certain statue of Sekhmet, as I recall, at a temple of Ptah in Luxor, are really very interesting. And this is all part of the reason why so many people are drawn to the Egyptian room at museums or to travel to Egypt itself to be in the presence of objects which carried this kind of power and still, you know, apparently retain it, right?
Right.
So how does this move us forward? How does this move us forward? Sometimes you've got to go backwards in order to go forward. How does connecting with ancient traditions of this kind, which in some ways are very foreign and in some ways very familiar. I mean, for me as a dreamer, some aspects of this are very familiar. And you tell some ancient Egyptian dreams in your story, for example. Let me pause on that again for a moment. I know I'm wandering. The best conversation proceed as walkabouts. You write about the astral activities of an ancient Egyptian called Kamuest. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that exactly right, but and it's something about getting a child, bringing a child through, and then traveling on the astral plane to a place where they could talk to the spirit child who might come into the body, and bringing them through that way. That is exactly what traditional Australian Aborigines do, and they talk about it that way. To bring a spirit child into the body, we need a spiritual parent or a spiritual intercessor who will make the journey to the place where the spirit children are to be found and persuade one to come through into the body. So I guess I'm quoting one ancient tradition in support of another, but some parts of this seem very familiar. The idea that objects have power and magic seems very familiar, and yet in some ways it's so ancient and there are so many funny words associated with it, and of course there are crocodiles and cobras and other things. So why in the context of, let us say, an ordinary modern life, do we need to turn to Egypt and draw as heavily on Egypt as you're encouraging us to do? Why should we do that?
For me, I think that we are experiencing a time in our culture where we are much more aware of multiple spiritual realities or disciplines or religions, if you will. And I think that, you know, when I talk to people who are who have grown up traditionally in a Christian church or a Jewish home or, you know, some similar, many of them said, well, I used to believe that, but now I've moved away from that, and my spiritual belief and understanding is more about how the natural world is part of my religion. I hear so many people telling me that, and I think to myself, well, I mean, that's ancient Egyptian, because the word for Netter, which was simply N-T-R, was pronounced in the Coptic Christian tradition. Netter, that's the word for God, a god or a goddess. And then the Greeks picked it up, and it became nature. So it's the natural world. Lucretius was talking about, you know, apprehend God in all things. Well, that's Meister Eckhart, because God is in all things. Every single creature is filled with God and is a book about God, you know. And I believe that we are not, we are opening the doors, I'll say, to expanding our consciousness of what religion and spirit is.
Well, that's very eloquent, and that's certainly goosing us up to do a lot more of this. What about the idea? I mean, you quote early on in your new book one of the Hermetic texts in which we have the Egypt of the Greek, Theosophists and Neoplatonists and Gnostics coming in together with the ancient Egyptian wisdom. What about the idea that one of the thoughts of Egypt that we should pay attention to is that we live in a world of continuous creation? I mean, creation is not over. It's going on all the time. And that if we learn certain things from these traditions, we can participate in co-creation. We can become part of it, along with the Netero, along with the life in all animate things. We're talking to Normandy Ellis. She's the author of many books, especially about ancient Egypt and how we can apply the wisdom traditions. One of the ones that I love is about the magic of the hieroglyphs. She's very keen on the Hekkar, the magic words. We'll be back after a break to talk more with her. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss.
Where can you find out about dreams and the dream world? MossDreams.com. At MossDreams.com, you can find out about Robert Moss, his work, and discover the way of the dreamer. Read numerous articles and essays on almost every facet of dreams. Find out Robert's class and workshop schedule. Read reviews and so much more. Visit MossDreams.com to find your way of the dreamer. That's MossDreams.com.
Robert Moss has a deep engagement with the dream world. And now you can take a crash course from this master of the act of dreaming at your own pace. That's right. You can get Robert's 8 exciting half-hour programs on a new DVD set called Way of the Dreamer. Share Robert's story as a dreamer and dream healer. This dynamic 3 DVD set can help teach you how to find your way through your dreams to realize your full potential. Don't wait to learn the practical dreamwork techniques that can help you understand how to attain better health, emotional stability, spiritual awareness, and more. Order Way of the Dreamer DVDs today from Amazon.com or MossDreams.com. That's MossDreams.com.
We're HealthyLife.net, reaching and helping a worldwide audience without hype, without shock, and without shenanigans.
You're listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss. Our wonderful guest is Normandy Ellis. We've been talking about ancient Egyptian traditions, Egyptian understanding of the soul and its many components and spiritual bodies and all of that. And just before we go further, I've been discovering in Normandy's new book, the one we're going to read fairly soon, which is on soul transformation, I've been discovering how she takes awareness of death, particularly from the Egyptian books of the afterlife, Abaduat and so on, how she takes awareness of death and uses it to encourage us to grow our appreciation and consciousness in life. She actually suggests that, for example, thinking about the Isis, Osiris, Horus, death story, the tragedy, the drama, the rebirth, and all of that, we take elements from that Egyptian mythic tale, which is one of the ones that will be endlessly told and retold, and develop it into meditations for our own lives. I mean, as in writing about moments when we felt divided or torn apart or put in a box and betrayed, or moments in which we managed to feel ourselves rising from the dead. Just talk to us a little bit about that, Normandy, and actually, if you wanted to, you could give us a very small example of taking an element from any part of the Egyptian stories and traditions, and then encouraging us to think about and meditate on it, and maybe after the show turn it into a quick writing exercise, the sort of thing that you do in your coming book. Would you like to do something like that?
I think so. I might be able to do that.
Okay.
Go ahead. I wanted to mention, because we were talking about how people are so engaged in the natural world these days. It's something that we are more and more aware of because we are facing environmental degradation. It was one of the 42 laws of Ma'at that were part of what we call a negative confession. They're based on, you know, the Ten Commandments are based on these 42. You know, we don't lie, we don't diss the gods or our neighbors, etc. But one of the things that's interesting to me is that in the Egyptian tradition, one of the 42 confessions is, I have not dammed the river. I have not polluted the river. The river was the source of life. It was everything. And these days, you know, we are having a lot of trouble with the land and the rivers being polluted. And when we understand that those are natural living beings with consciousness, that they are the body of God, we begin to understand the value of not polluting them. So anyway, I just wanted to make that point.
I want to endorse you for quoting that. There are different translations of that part of the negative confession, as of everything. One that I've used for a long time is, I have not obstructed water when it should flow. I mean, that's another way of translating the same idea. And on
that,
a personal level in life, in terms of being open to flow and open to creativity, and in terms of defending the environment and literally defending water, when water supplies are so at risk in so many places. I mean, this is very contemporary stuff, so thank you for bringing that to our attention.
Yes,
the invitation remains open. We can save it till the next segment, because then we won't have to interrupt it with a break. But I would love to renew the invitation, Normandy, for you to tell us some part of one of the Egyptian stories briefly, and then to guide us to meditate on it, with maybe doing the home play assignment if we feel like it, of writing from it, you know, in our lives. This is the substance of the book you have coming, and I'd like our listeners to have an experience of how this might work, if that appeals to you.
Okay. All right. Well, one thing that I will mention, what's coming to mind is that, and it's coming to my mind because we are at this moment in our lives as a country, as a planet. Many people are feeling very stressed out. They're feeling very lost. I think we are collectively experiencing a dark night of the soul and wondering, in some cases, where has the divine gone? Why hast thou forsaken me? You know, and that is part of understanding the immersion into the Egyptian underworld. When you get all the way down to the bottom of the tomb, there are 12 hours of the night, and at the sixth hour, the darkest night of the soul, there is a story of Osiris who has left the earth and has gone into the underworld. And he says, you know, he wonders, where am I? How did this happen? I'm here, I'm feeling myself here, but I can't see anything, I can't hear anything, I don't understand what is happening to me, I can't even breathe, there's no air. No, is there someone here with me? And a tomb, whose name translates as everything and nothing, by the way, a tomb is seated back to back with Osiris in the underworld. But Osiris can't hear him, feel him, experience him. He doesn't know that God, the creator and destroyer, is with him. And he says, who are you? And he says, I am the one who made the world. I made everything. He's basically the embodiment of the Big Bang that turns into the great black hole. You know, and he's sitting right there next to Osiris. And he says, well, when Osiris says, when will I see you? I have to see your face. I can't live without my senses. And Osiris says to him, no, that's not possible. The tomb says to Osiris, no, that's not possible. You're just going to have to stay here with me. And I'm not going to let you look at my face because you would not be able to stand the sorrow of that emptiness. And then Osiris says, well, what am I supposed to do? And he says, well, you will be with me, you will stay with me, and you will see things come and go and pass around you. And you will always be with me, a part of me. And I am a tomb. I will destroy everything that I created. One day I'm going to roll it all back up into myself, and it will be as if there was no man who ever saw any god. So Osiris thinks about that, and he says, so why have you got me trapped here? And he said, well, because you are possibility. You are the seed of God consciousness, and when I decide to roll everything back out, I am going to have you with me as the seed of possibility, and we shall make the world again together. I think that is an incredible story from the ancient tradition, and it's one that I learned from Eric Horning in his Conceptions of God in Ancient Egypt. And I think that makes us understand the power of co-creation, even though we may not know exactly how we are to do it. We are the possibility.
Yes. You told that thrillingly well, Normandy. Thank you. I mean, it was quite terrifying. You also took us to a place where many of us have been, and perhaps where, with the help of your wonderful vocal meditation, we can go again in order to begin to understand, you know, how renewal might come from this. What a great storyteller you are. We are listening to Normandy Ellis. He's just told us a story of Osiris, no less, in the talk about the dark night of the soul, a very dark night of the soul. And we'll be back for more after the break. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com. Get your personal dream symbols and discover the ones you dream about in Linda McKenzie's Symbols of You, a new book available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, and more.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net, the radio network that brings positive talk with positive change to make your world a little better.
All right. We're having a wonderful time with Normandy Ellis. She just told us a terrifying and enlivening story from the Egyptian tradition, as retold by Eric Hornung, who some of you will be familiar with as a prolific German scholar of the Egyptian books of the afterlife. Normandy, I made a list of things that seem to me to be perennial in our understanding of a soul and its peregrinations, which are relevant to Egypt and perhaps relevant to any spirited tradition. This is from my point of view, and it's not meant to be any kind of complete list, it's just meant to be a list of talking points. And one of them is this: our teachers may come to us in dreams, and we need to remember them. Contact with the departed is natural, and as those Egyptian letters to the dream, to the dead remind us, again, it can be facilitated in dreams and altered states of consciousness. We may have a sacred contract before we started out in the present life, and I think that's something that's on your mind quite a lot. We'll come back to that. We may have previous personalities, whether or not we see them as a reincarnational chain, members of our soul family who are relevant to our current life dramas and choices. And there are words of power that can help us through. That's one of your favorite subjects. Let's talk a little bit about the sacred contract, and let me give you a vignette from my life to get us started. I was living on the farm, which I came to because of a encounter with a hawk under a white oak tree, and I was living on the farm, and it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and there's someone at the door under full moonlight, and I wouldn't normally open the door, but I do. And there's a stranger who looks friendly, but a bit simple. I think I'll know who. I've got someone peddling religion, and he says to me, I come from my father's house, and I think, oh, yes, he's peddling religion, isn't he? He mentions a name, which is a name of my Scottish ancestors, and I'm looking at him, and he says, what is your contract with God? And I'm stunned. At this moment, I become aware I'm dreaming. It was not a lucid dream up to this point. And I'm stunned by the question. It's not my language, at least not at that time, but if the stranger who seems to have some kind of familial connection is asking me, what is my contract with God? Well, then presumably I have one. And if I do, how could I have forgotten? So that put me on a trail. I mean, we're talking nearly 40 years ago. I'm thinking about these things, thinking about how we access again, and what kind of Akashic library or what kind of personal vault of ancestral memory we access the mission, the assignment we might have accepted or been led to accept before we came here. I think that's pretty much on your mind, isn't it? And it's one of the things I think that you may encourage people to think about.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I, actually, in a dream one time, I was standing up on a platform overlooking the world that was appearing inside a great cauldron of water, as kind of a gelatinous-looking pot. And there were geometric shapes being floating around on the top of it. And I looked at it, and I realized it was an astrological chart. And I was with these seven other beings, and we were moving these shapes around. And I said, oh, look, there's a grand trine in Earth. Oh, look, there's a lot of squares in this one, you know. Oh, that person's going to have some things to overcome, but that's good. That'll make them grow. That'll be good for them. It's like, oh, look at that. There's a very beautiful conjunction here. That person will have lots of things to say. What a great chart. And then the seven other beings said, yes, it is. Jump in. So I was up in the heavens creating my birth chart. You know, that was my contract. I truly believe one of the ways to understand my contract now, and it's taken me a while to get there, is to look at the astrology of my birth chart and to see what did I agree to come in for, and am I doing it? You know, so for me that's important. And going through these 12 hours of the night, there are different things that we need to do, different things that we need to think about. What was my relationship, not just with this person, but let's say, what was my relationship to things? What was my relationship to the idea of change, you know, and stability? And so there are many things that we have to face as we are going through our life contract. Everybody has a different, you know, a different area. So yours may be home, yours may be career, another person's might be possessions. They may have trouble with money or relationships, or, but that's what we agreed to come in here to work on, you know. And it's not those things. It's like Set, who's the god who ripped up Osiris's life. He didn't do it just for fun. In a way, he was part of Osiris's contract with Set, when he was even yet in the womb of the goddess Nut, their mother. And he said, I'm going to take this part of your life and I'm going to tear it up. And, you know, and then you will have to figure out how to put it back together. And I think that that's a contract we have with the angels in our lives. Those people that we sometimes think are our devils are actually fulfilling their contract and creating a resistance for us so that our soul can rise up to the occasion and overcome the fear that's associated with it and learn to love through the dissolution of a part of our life. I mean, that's part of the soul contract.
Yes. Yes, and you're reminding me you've also written a book about angels, and as Rilke said, every angel is terrifying. Every angel is the source of both wonder and terror, isn't it? And trials and obstacles will be part of the teaching, as well as support and intercession. I had to investigate my possible soul contract, my assignment. I haven't fulfilled all of the details. I've tried to renegotiate bits and pieces. But more currently, and perhaps more easy to think about, amongst my many encounters with the departed in my dreams, which often happen quite spontaneously, without invocation, without ritual, without payoffs, without offerings, I had an encounter last winter in February of this year with my favorite dead professor, a very important mentor and friend of mine when I was a student and a junior professor in Australia, and he died many years ago. He's appeared in important dreams. He usually appears without me thinking about him, and he shows up, you know, on a sort of Australian beach in February this year. We have a very interesting conversation about life and about the nature of the guide in dreams. And then he says to me, I found this very interesting as an example of interplay with the guide, in this case, as he appears in dreams. He said to me, will you please state your central theme right now? And he's speaking to me as a writer and teacher. Will you state your central theme right now? And that's a good writing assignment, isn't it? A good meditating assignment. And I wrote that. I looked it up just now. Right. I said this to him, Normandy, and perhaps we can come back to it. There is another world within reach of this one, especially in dreams, where great teachers are available to help us find our purpose in life and act on it. That's the best I could do at the moment. But when I looked at it, I said, thank you. Thank you, Manning. Thank you, Professor. I rather like this as a statement of a current sense of assignment. It's not perhaps the whole soul contract thing from before you were born, but as a statement of intention, as a central theme for someone who is engaged as a teacher and writer, I was glad to have it. And I'm not sure I would have put it down with that clarity if I hadn't been prompted to do so. Now, psychologically, you could say, well, of course, he's an aspect of you. And that might be so. But I think he's also a transpersonal teacher. Anyway, we're talking to Normandy Ellis about some very interesting things about life, death, rebirth, all of it. We'll be back to hear more after the break, and we'll also hear how you can contact Normandy, find out about her tours to Egypt, and about her many interesting books.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Yeah, listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. Normandy, lots of people will want to know more about you. Many people know of you already, of course, who listen to this show. Your tours of Egypt, you've got a new one coming up. Your books, a new one of those coming up, too. How do people find you?
The best way to find me is to go to my website, which is easy to find, normandyellis.com. You have to spell it with an I, not a Y, but normandyellis.com. And if you go there, you can find all about the trips that I'm taking, the classes that I'm leading, both in person and online. You can get to my blog and my Patreon. And if you're interested in studying with me to continue your interest in ancient Egypt and become a clergy of an ancient Egyptian deity, then there's a path for that on there as well.
That's right. You call yourself what? High Priestess of Isis? What do you call yourself in the Egyptian connection?
I do call myself a High Priestess of Isis. Yes,
well, I think you've certainly done the work for that, Normandy. Your second book that I read, and it's still my personal favorite, is called Dreams of Isis. So people could go there, and of course Isis, well, she said this in her Aratology, in her description of herself in Apuleius as the Golden Ass, which is a comic novel that turns into a deep spiritual text. When Isis comes on stage, Isis basically says that she is the goddess, or goddesses are aspects of her.
There's one
very specific thing I want to ask you about, peeking at your new book. You mentioned being fascinated by the fact that in an inscription relating to Thutmose III, his coffin seems to be stuck on a sandbar. Do you remember this?
Yes.
Well, I was looking at it this morning, and it was reminding me of a poem by Tennyson, which is sometimes sung at funerals. I don't know whether you remember this. It's called Crossing the Bar. And it's about the idea that the soul on death, making a crossing by water to the other world, might run into sandbars where it might get stuck. And it begins, I won't try to sing it, but you can sing it. Sunset and evening star, one clear call for me, and may there be no moaning of the bar when I put out to sea. And then it comes back to bar again at the end. And it's not the kind of bar where you have a drink. It's the sandbar where the boat might get stuck. And I'm thinking, is this a connection across time and cultures? Maybe it is. Maybe there's some depiction there in the Egyptian mind of getting stuck on something like a sandbar.
Well, yes, I think so. I certainly believe that our dream life becomes filled with ancient Egyptian imagery. I wrote a book of poetry one time in which I left the book open while I slept, and I had two statues of Egyptian scribes next to my notebook, and I said, okay, boys, wake me up when you got something. And they would, and it was very much an Egyptian story. I believe the consciousness that was there, that was for 3,000 years kept by these scribes who were writing about it over and over and over in the books of the dead, is a consciousness that was enlivened, as we spoke about, and eternal. And I have forgotten the Tennyson poem, but you're right. That's exactly it. And the thing that fascinates me about that scene is that, we'll go back to the idea of the dark night of the soul, when you think you're stuck on the bar, the little panel line or the caricature above the gods, there's a hieroglyphic phrase that says, the gods are pulling for you. It's like there's nothing you can do about it, but you see this tow rope, and it's pulling you out of the bar. And I just think, okay, the gods are pulling for me. You know, I can do everything that I can to try to prevent this from happening, but I have to rely on the trust that the gods are pulling for me.
Good to have gods pulling for you. I once did a reading a long time ago with a babalao of Ifa, high divination priest of the Yoruba tradition, and he was speaking in Spanish, and the first thing, his first question in the reading was, who among the Orishas, who among the greater powers, defends this person? That's the first question. So understanding that in a pluralistic environment, polytheistic, if you like, many faces of the divine between us and the one is perhaps the way that the enlightened way to think about it. But amongst all these power, sorted potencies and powers and Nateru and Orishas and so on, some will support an individual, some will pull for them, some will not, some will be against them, some will be neutral, etc. So the first question is, who is pulling for this person? And then, of course, once you discover that, it's going to, you know, adjust your allegiances. When I was feeling very sick at one point in my life, because you like segments so much, when I was feeling very sick, I had a dream, a very powerful dream, one I'd asked for, no ritual, but I just asked for a dream of healing. And in my dream, I'd been beset upon by a pack of hyenas. And out comes a female lion. I mean, a maned lion, but she's a field mire lion with a pack of lions. And the problem is dealt with very expeditiously. There's a lot of action. There's a lot of drama. There's a lot of mayhem. But I had no doubt that Sekhmet, without being directly invoked or involved, had come to my rescue. And that's the way I wrote the report. And I made a picture of it. That's my way of making an offering quite often. I will draw or paint from these experiences. Yeah. So Sekhmet apparently came into play, and I thought, well, that's a pretty good deity to have pulling for you, isn't it?
That's a pretty good deity to have pulling for you, exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. But I think that when we're in that dark night of the soul, we forget that, you know, that it could be an illness. It could be, you know, an emotional stuck place. It could be sometimes a mental stuck place where we need the gods pulling for us. But like Osiris sitting in that dark, you know, there's a tomb promised him that there will be another time. You're the possibility that something else is going to happen in life. And the Egyptians totally believed that when the flood came and it washed away everything and it filled the temples full of mud, that was called the Zeptepi. And it was the beginning of the destruction and the recreation of Egypt. And it happened every year. Every year. And so we are always having a renewal. You know, you look at right before your birthday things. If you walk through the cemetery, you'll notice there are lots of people who die right before their birthdays. And that's part of the Zeptepi process. There's a clearing out and then a re-bringing in new energy, you know. And so I just think that, you know, it's more cyclical and common than we think. And the Zeptepi experience is, you know, if we don't have it, then the river gets clogged and it doesn't run. And we wonder why our lives are in chaos, because we haven't allowed for something that needed to pass to pass. And so having a Zeptepi experience is very, very important.
Very powerful words, very powerful invitation to the deeper life from a high priestess of Isis. Great teacher, great traveler, great guide in the many worlds, wonderful author, Normandy Ellis. And you know how to find her now, Normandy, but forget the beaches of Normandy, or if you remember them, drop the Y, Normandy with an I, Ellis. You can find her online easily and check her out. I mean, her tours to Egypt, I haven't had the pleasure of going myself on one of her tours to Egypt, but I know they are marvelous. She's a teacher of many things, Egyptian traditions, connections with spirit, soul growing, author of some great books.
And you've been listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. We'll be back to say really thank you and dream on after the break.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you are interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Normandy Ellis, what a great pleasure and honor to have you on the show. Thank you for all the depth of heart and memory and experience that you bring to us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
All right, everybody, as we go forward on the roads of life, the roads of soul, the roads of dreaming, may our doors and gates and paths be open, and may the doors and gates and paths of any who wish to do us or those we love any harm be closed. May it be so.